afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 52nd edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Malwal Mabour, who grew up in Bor, South Sudan, trained as a physician in his country, the UK, and in Jordan. He is now working in public health for the city of Portland and has plans to become a physician's assistant through a program at UNE so he can return to practicing medicine in a more clinical way. He is here today to talk about life's interesting journey and also to recognize ILAP, the Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project. ILAP is both the organization that helped his family to become legal and established here, and is also he is also a member of their board of trustees at this time. Welcome, Malwal, and thank you for coming in today to this kind of crazy studio where Begathon's going on.
No, thank you so much. It's an honor to be here to you, Kate, this morning. Thank you.
Well, let's start in the very beginning. I wonder if we could go back to South Sudan. Can you tell us what life was like for you as a child there?
Yeah, at the time, actually, South Sudan wasn't known by the name of South Sudan, but it's just part of southern part of Sudan. And of course, like early, my elder brother, he was born in South Sudan. And then because of work and so many other commitments, actually, my family moved to Khartoum, to the capital, actually, of Sudan at the time. And I grew up, actually, there as a child. And for me and my brothers, actually, I have four other siblings, but we have so many extended family members, actually, like cousins and, you know, extended cousins. And we don't know actually who's everybody actually in the house is related to you, as we assume. But we have so many people, especially because of the poverty and the hard life actually at the time. Of course, if somebody who's employed, he will be responsible for the extended family. We grew up actually like in, let's say, like around four bedrooms, but around 40 people actually were living there in
wow.
this kind of space. And for us, actually, we grew up as outsiders. You know, we've been outside most of the time, not like right now inside the apartment or the house, but we grew up actually
living
in the open
outdoors.
Air, living outdoor, even sleeping outdoor. And the funny thing, actually, because of the number of people actually there, life was simple. We were happy despite of the situation. For example, when I look back at it, I will be surprised to know, for example, where I was sleeping or where I spent my time. And what's funny is, for example, when they bring food, and then they divide people. Like, okay, the girls will eat by themselves, the boys will eat by themselves, and the elderly, for example, sometimes they will eat, or the men could eat also with some boys and some other people, and they will bring it and then they put it down. You don't have your own plate, but everybody share from the same plate, and everybody be sure, of course, to wash his hands before eating, and then eating like that. Actually, I was so skinny, you know. It's really hard. I learned how to eat very fast. Because if I didn't eat fast, I would stay hungry, and there is no snack between actually meals actually over there. Yeah, breakfast, lunch, and maybe dinner, but there is no snacks in between. So I have to be sure that you know, like somebody has to eat, for example, fast. And these are one of the things that, for example, like hunted me from this day till now. I'm a fast eater a little bit compared.
Well, you're a physician too. That actually really helps when you're a doctor. They usually don't even stop for lunch.
Yeah, exactly. You know, after taking my trainings and everything, it's really the meal is the least thing that I'm thinking about all the time, because being on the go and the run, especially during residency programs and during internship programs, it's so intense to the extent, and there is no really time set for us actually over there to eat. For example, like the number of patients that we are seeing, and patient after patient after patient, it's really hard. And also, sometimes the patient that come to you, he will be hungry or he's been waiting for you for hours and hours, let's say, in the ER, because most of the time we're working actually in the emergency department and everything. And it is hard to say that, okay, well, the doctor want to have his food, and while your patient, for example, probably did not eat anything since morning. So it's challenging. So you never think about it. And
your food's not a big piece.
It's absolutely.
What might a great meal have been at home when you were a child that would have been served to you as a boy?
A lot of actually food. I started not to be so much selective. Because of, okay, I don't like this or I don't like that, you know, whatever food actually being offered to you. But I realized, since early childhood that, okay, well, if I say I don't eat something, people will set some food aside for you, for example. So I started to say, oh, no, I don't want to eat onion. I don't eat onion. I don't like onion and everything. So, and most of the food actually would be having like onion, unless it's cooked actually within the food. But if it is like outside, it is difficult for me to say, oh, no, Malwal doesn't eat onion. So they would put his portion outside. So that at least some of survival tactics, actually.
That was a pretty good trick. They'd save it aside for you.
Yeah.
I love that. What do you miss most about your years in Sudan and now with South Sudan?
Yes. And after that, of course, we used to go for trips actually to Sudan, to South Sudan, where we belong, before actually the war started in 1983. And this is where my last visit actually to South Sudan in 1983. And life was so simple. It was so good, actually. We would look actually at our parents, actually, like the mentors and the people that provided us with knowledge, with informations. And our respect to the elderly, to the parents, it's really huge. Because most of the time they are the people who showed us what is right and what is wrong. And they implanted actually good values within us. Especially my mother, really. She helped me to become a man I am right now. She mentioned to me actually that you can become anything that you want. The most important thing, we want you to be a person with value and dignity. And we want you to be a good person, not actually like a criminal. Yes. And then also she said, she usually says that even if you are a cleaner in the road or everywhere, be sure that you are the best cleaner at your workplace or even on the street or anything. As far as something honorable, it's not shameful. But the shameful thing is when you take something, like illegal, or when you try to sneak, actually like to take something in the easy way. Because of the nature that we grew up in, it wasn't actually given into us in the golden spoon, but we have to find ourselves and struggle. And they were so happy with my father because they say that they built their house brick after brick, and they really wanted us to also having that kind of determination in life. Yeah,
to build your life brick by brick.
Exactly.
That's a beautiful analogy.
Thank you.
So do you miss your mother when you're here in the U.S.?
Yeah, of course, both parents, and I have really great respect to them. They are growing up right now. Back home, they are doing their best, actually, at the community to let South Sudan to stay in peace and stability, and they are really calling for peace and calling for harmony, calling for people that we can love each one another once again. And we hope and we pray that things actually will change back home. And I miss them really so much. Exactly. Yeah.
I think it would be hard to know they were there living such a different life from yours now. And they must be very proud of all you've done all over the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. And because of them, I really managed to become the man actually I am. They was very supportive. I did not actually lack anything. Since my early childhood, they did their best that they can actually be sure that, we don't sleep hungry, unless I decided not to eat, actually.
Yes. But you had mentioned before that as a child you were very good at math, and you had thought maybe you would like to be an engineer, but then you changed courses and you thought maybe you'd be a doctor. What What made you want to be a doctor?
Well, and you know, like just coming into your studios, seeing all these buttons and different things. Oh, you say, oh, I wish to be like an electronic engineer or electrical engineer. Actually, that was my passion. And I was so good, actually, at my childhood in mathematics. And then when I started to learn about science more, I loved biology. I loved chemistry, physics. I don't love physics as much, but I always score really good. And also I had like a chance to, because I loved, you know, like problem solving. That's why my affinity to mathematics, actually, because everything in math actually is a problem. So, and I was like calling myself when I was so young, actually, I'm a problem solver. So I want to solve that problem. Oh. So I wish really to have a superpower that's solving all the problems. And in my class and my colleagues, actually, they had some difficulties in math. So I will tell them, oh, I will solve your problem if you want, actually. And they come to me, and I'm also kind of person that really like to help. So in the class, when I was so little, you know, like early elementary, I wasn't that bright, but, you know, average student. But after going to middle school level, especially like sixth grade, seventh grader, upwards, I don't know, I started to become on the top of the class always. And I don't mind, for example, like study the whole day or whole night, or if I didn't finish the task that I wanted to do, for example, whether it's a problem or something like that, I won't go to sleep, simply. And some people say, oh, Malwal, you study too much, you read hard and everything. Why is it like that? I told them that, you know, my problem is that I'm not so smart like you. So maybe you need to understand a subject. It's just taking you half an hour to understand it. But for me, maybe your half an hour, it is 2 hours for me. And unfortunately, I have to spend these 2 hours so that I can understand. But by the end of the year or the day, I will bring the highest scorer, because I managed to understand really what is it, actually.
I think you're very modest. I think you've invested a lot of time in education, and we'll be investing more soon. So you're a global doctor, having trained for your specialty in many different countries. Can you tell us a little bit about that process, how you found your way around your education?
The reason that I switched from being an engineer to become a doctor, actually, because actually in Sudan, health is a big problem. And my mother being actually a long term patient for rheumatoid arthritis, and I've seen actually so many complications, you know, like deformities in whether fingers, or she had to travel outside, for example, especially to Egypt, to do so many surgeries, and she came back and everything. So, and sometimes she will just be bedridden, you know, like for a week, and she need to be mobilized, actually be carried on, you know, from place to place. And it's really painful when to see somebody that you love and you adore, and you have like special, she's a mentor, she's everything to you, and seeing her actually like in that kind of pain. And also, you know, I've seen like a tragedy before, like a family member actually got burned, and this burn, it was very complicated. Of course, at the time, I didn't know what degree of that burn, or the first degree, second degree, third degree, or whatever. But and then everybody start to run away. For example, when somebody say, okay, go give your this water or this food to your aunt, we as young people say, oh, it was young boys and girls, oh no, we can't, nobody want to go there. But I had some courage, you know, to go there. And then I started to say to myself, okay, imagine if nobody want to go and give that aunt actually food or the water or something like that. But imagine if I am that person, would I love people to come and help me? So I remember this, the values so much. But before also taking a decision, because, you know, I'm so stubborn. I don't want somebody to tell me what to do. I just want to do what's something in my brain. And my mother, she knows me. So she came from an angle that it would be better if you, for example, like turn from engineering to become a doctor. You know, we need doctors in this country and everything. And really, I went on, and I don't know. It's a very tough and challenging kind of life later on, you know, studying very hard, have to spend so many nights after night and days actually like studying. It's simply we just like lost kind of socialization. And gladly, you know, there was no cell phones, no Facebook, no, nothing like that, you know.
No, so
that no distraction at all. We just like, we know the books and references. And after graduation also, the passion that came to my heart is to work, especially that's a tropical country, Sudan and South Sudan. And we had so many epidemics, actually, of tropical illnesses. We know, of course, malaria is being devastating, and also like epidemics of meningitis or simple thing like cholera. So it came to my brain. And then also when there is epidemic of such a kind, nobody would love, from the doctors, would love and treat this kind of patients. For example, if a person came with tuberculosis, it's a contagious disease. And a lot of people and a lot of doctors even, they will avoid patients like this completely. But my early
training,
mm-hmm. but my early even values and ideas actually like came back. Okay, imagine if I'm in that person's shoes, actually, what will happen? Will I like a doctor to come and help me or not?
You will help the most vulnerable
absolutely,
of them.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So this is actually like the desire and the passion. Also, I ended up actually in the missionaries, actually, a lot of time in the Christian missionaries. And I saw that, okay, well, I have grew up actually in a Christian family, and it really shaped my childhood and also when I grew up. And it came to my, I put a motto to myself, you know, like I have to really come and serve actually the least, the last, and the lost. And so many times actually the least and the last and the lost is the patient the patient that people are all rejecting, you know, like let's say a patient with HIV, which is something of course so stigmatizing back home. And so I decided to go for this tropical infectious diseases, and I've been trained in this tropical diseases and international health in the UK in great University of London, the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. And after that, of course, also took part of my training in internal medicine, actually, in Jordan, where I practiced internal medicine, but at the same time also like infectious disease. And I went back to South Sudan, and I practiced actually as a doctor over there, as being responsible for disaster and epidemic controls. And it was a good days, actually, in 2008 and 2009. I was in Jordan also, and then I moved to the United States in late 2009-2010.
You're listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. If you're just joining us, welcome. My guest today is Malwal Mabour. Malwal is originally from South Sudan and lives here in Portland with his wife, their daughter, and two sons. So, Malwal, your wife and family are here in Maine. They were here first while you were still working and training abroad. And how did you all find your way to iLab?
Yeah, I find my way in iLab because my wife, they came to the United States earlier in 2003. And she's the love of my life, Akir. I hope she's listening now. We've known each other actually before they travel, and they traveled they left Sudan actually in 2001, and they moved to Egypt, and from Egypt they came here in 2003. First they landed in San Diego, and after that they came to Maine just in 6 months. The only bad thing actually when they came in Maine, they came in winter, where it was a bad time to come. But
these weren't round tickets.
But they saw the beauty of Maine after, you know, when summer or spring actually like came out. And then gladly she didn't forget about me. She really went back to Sudan again, where we had our wedding in 2006. And then immediately when she came to the United States, because I was doing so many other things as well, I was just busy abroad, and I tried to apply for a visa, but being rejected, say, no, you don't have any genuine reasons to come to the United States. And I say, okay, well, it's okay. But she came and she filed for me to come to the United States as her husband. We married in 2006, and she filed through iLab. and iLab, because of iLab, I managed to come to the United States. And also, for example, like all herself, she became a citizen, U.S. citizen in 2008. And I myself also became a citizen through iLab. So I felt that, oh, wow, iLab did a great favor to me, actually. Like, it saved my family, it saved me and brought me here to this country. So as part of payback, I've been nominated actually to join the board by another colleague, actually, Dr. Caroline Atashka, and she asked me if I'm willing to do this one. I would say, oh my God, I will die for that. This is really, I love to pay back also to help others, you know, like in Maine or others like migrants and refugees actually to manage to stay and manage to change their status mm-hmm. here in the United States, because especially your status is the key for any other things that a person wanted to do here. So if you want to leave here, you have to leave. For example, in a way that actually according to the law, you shouldn't be like staying actually without. You know, to become undocumented or something like that, and there are huge number of people here in the United States and in Maine, and they don't have a papers actually, and they are people with talents. They have a lot of talents, a lot of responsibility actually in their shoulders, but because they don't have the papers, the right paper, you know, their status is not being considered or being considered as undocumented. Actually, it affected their life, but we have seen so many lives that change when their status actually changed in the United States.
I think it's kind of interesting that still once you're here, you're finding a way to help the least, the lost, and the last.
Absolutely.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I love it. iLab is truly amazing. It's a nonprofit. It means Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project. And they were established as a pro bono effort in 1993, where the lawyers just gave their time away. Now, they became incorporated in 2000, and now they have a staff of 9 and 200 volunteers, including 125 pro bono attorneys, who invest up to 100 hours for an asylum case. I know people who have done this. It's a really generous, loving act to help someone get documented status.
Absolutely. They are really very committed lawyers. They donated, actually, like, if I'm... Their time has to be compensated. Actually, it's a million, actually, yes. A million plus, actually, from their time to help the immigrants. And most of the migrants actually that are here, they are here for the sake of having the dream, the American dream, and they're here to achieve and to build their life and to build their families. And a lot of them, they don't mind to start from the scratch. You know, for example, like when my wife was here at the beginning, she worked in different kind of environments. She's been working everywhere, from especially like L.L. Beans and Baba Foods and all these places. But her goal was, yes, to allow me to be with her. That's why she was working very hard. But after I came here right now, okay, she stopped, say, oh, no more work. Now time for studying. So she went back to school. She's in USM actually doing nursing. And gonna graduate soon. And for me, yes, I say, okay, well, I will start work here in the United States. And I've been working in different places in mental health and right now, actually, in the public health setting. But I miss my clinical lives, and I hope to go back actually again through UNE here to get my training, actually, like a PA.
A PA, a physician's assistant.
Yes, absolutely.
So by going through iLAP and having a legal status, you are able to then access everything you need to do to establish a really healthy, happy life here. I know you and your family own a condo and cars and pay taxes and work your full citizens.
Absolutely. And I
managed to vote.
To get my citizenship actually in 2013. And then I managed to vote. And this is actually the second time. The first time I voted is the referendum of South Sudan, of course. And we went to vote for South Sudan in Boston in 2011. But being a citizen, being a U.S. Naturalized, actually, it's an honor to be part of this one, of voting. And I had that experience, actually.
In our last presidential election?
This is state election.
A state election.
Presidential, of course, I can't wait for 2016.
Coming right up.
Yes.
ILAP serves 3,000 individuals a year, from everything from filling out work authorization forms to full representation for asylum cases. They're really quite remarkable. I think people all over the state know them. They don't just work here in Portland, though their hub is right here in Portland. And this Friday evening, ILAP is to host their 11th annual Cele Soiree, which is a gala affair to be held at Ocean Gateway on Commercial Street in Portland. And listeners, guess what? You're invited.
That's great.
You can get your tickets at ilapmaine.org, but seating's limited. The entertainment this year is going to be the Circus Conservatory, which is also an exciting group of people to have, and an international group of people to have, now based out of Portland, doing kind of amazing things, including handstands on little pie plates. The tickets are $75 for this fancy affair, and they're online at ilapmaine.org. Mm-hmm. And the doors open at 5:30, and there will be parking, which is free at Cele Soiree down at the terminal. And when you buy your ticket, you can be part of something really huge, something that makes Maine very special. And when immigrants have legal status, they start businesses, they generate income, and they have healthy, happy, stable lives after many years of living in conflict, living in habitable situations. And they're happy to be here. As you said, we'll work hard. And I've seen so much of that.
Absolutely.
Malwal, you have such a bright, warm smile, and I think a bright future here in Maine as well. Thank you for being willing to come on New Mainers Speak today.
Thank you, Kate, and I hope maybe to meet you once again. And thank you to everybody who's listening as well.
I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest, Malwal Malbur. We will close today's program with a song he has chosen for us. Can you introduce our closing song, Malwal?
Yeah, this is actually my brother is a musician, and he's a person with he loved media so much. His name is Deng Mabor, and he goes by name Mr. D. And he has a beautiful song actually called Praise Your Might. We want maybe to listen to it right now. Thank you.
Beautiful. Praise Your Might.
Time. Raise your mind.